I'm a big believer in fail forward. So I bought all these single family homes, right? I will never buy another single family home again. I do not like to be an operator whatsoever. So I learned my lesson not to own these single family homes again. But the great thing about investing in the mobile home park space is that I am now an LP, a limited partner, right? I get the best of both worlds, right? I get the returns and I get to own the assets.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I have the pleasure of chatting with Cindy Hook. Now, Cindy is a trailblazer in the realm of real estate investing with a keen focus on capital raising, private money lending, investing coaching for self-directed 401k setups, and mobile home park investing. She's also the co-founder of Creative Real Estate University, a pivotal force behind River Life Holdings, LLC, and Cindy embodies this spirit of innovation in finance. With a deep-seated passion for acquisitions, renovations, and management of properties, Cindy offers a well-rounded perspective of real estate market, and her educational sessions at Creative Real Estate University break down the complexity of private money lending and the strategic advantages of mobile home park investing, providing a clear path for investors to utilize private capital efficiently. I'm really pumped and excited to have her on the show today to share her incredible insight and knowledge in the industry. But enough out of me, let's get her out here. G'day, Cindy. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
My pleasure. And we're just talking in the green room a little bit. You are dialing in from Phoenix, Arizona, right?
Yep. That's where I am from, Phoenix, Arizona.
I know too well because we own a lot of assets out there, but it's starting to get a little cooler out there, right? You know, with all the...
Yes, as you can see, like a couple of weeks ago, I was in just a t-shirt. Now I'm in like sweatshirts because we have, you know, no humidity. So when it gets cold, it gets cold.
Yes. Well, look, I'm really pumped, as I said, to have you on the show, but we're going to rewind the clock. And I ask all my guests to come on the show. Can you rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid?
How did I? Well, I think I just like everyone else as a kid, you know, I went out and got a job. That was a long time ago. I don't remember what my first job was, but I do know I worked at a juice bar. They actually had juice bars back then, way back then. That's what I say. But yeah, I think that was probably, you know, I got my first job, you know, as 16 years old and, you know, wanted to, you know, my parents at the time said, if you want to go out and buy, you know, being a girl, right? You know, we liked our clothes. And so, you know, if you want to go out and buy your own stuff, you got to make a dollar. So yeah, that's kind of where, you know, started my first job, you know, in high school. That's started working right away.
I love those stories and parents really instilling in their kids, like, you know, like, we're not just going to hand you money, right? You got to go out and earn it and the value of a dollar. So awesome. Thanks, mom and dad.
Yep. And, you know, I think you learn the value of a dollar. Like, my dad was an entrepreneur himself. He was an optometrist, right? I mean, I saw him own his own businesses, right? And go out and be successful owning his own, optometry businesses. So I think, you know, obviously that guided me of who I am today. And I'm an entrepreneur myself.
Talk a little bit more about that and how that shaped you as we now put the pieces together of your path to where you are today. Like, did you go to uni? Did you have a formal education? Did you get sick and tired of the rat race? Like, what was the whole sort of, you know, the aha moment that you wanted to get out of it?
When I was growing up, we were told to go to school, college, university, or you call it uni. Actually, I went to Sydney University. I did a study abroad in Sydney. But
awesome.
But anyway, so when I, you know, that's how your path was supposed to be. You were supposed to go to college and get a college degree and then move on. Yes, I did that. And I'm not mocking college education today at all by any means. But it didn't prepare me to be an entrepreneur. I still say to this day that, granted, I was a very lucky person. My parents did pay for my schooling, right? Very lucky. I'm blessed, but it didn't teach me how to run a business. You know, it didn't teach me those fundamentals of what I do today, of running a business. Did I grow up thinking I wanted to be an entrepreneur? Absolutely not. It's always a fail forward, right? I mean, what I thought I wanted to do when in my early 20s is, you know, completely different from where I am today. So, yeah.
Did you have a stint in the corporate world at all?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah. From a small to very large. I even worked for Amazon on the corporate side. Yes. I had both sides of the house. Yes. And I can tell you, I don't like making the owners richer. I like making myself richer. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, no. I think that's, you know, for me as well, being a young person, I did a university degree as well in structural engineering. So really good with problem solving, but couple that on top with travel, you're traveling the world as a young person, really opened my eyes. But having that experience in the corporate world creates a bit of pain, like you just, you know, you described around the creating money for your bosses, right? And that helps, you know, set the stage for a little fire within to say, I want to do a little bit more with that. So what was that moment for you where you said, okay, enough's enough? And was there straight into real estate, or was it there other, you know, entrepreneurial, you know, ventures along the way?
I am actually a recruiter, or the olden terms you want to call a headhunter. I have been recruiting for 25 years. I own my own recruiting agency. I still own my own recruiting agency. I'm going back to my parents because my dad was an entrepreneur himself. Back in 2012, my father said to me, stop making money for others. Go off and do it on your own. And at that time, back in 2012, I was very scared because, you know, what if it failed, right? You know, there was, you know, what if it failed and so on and so forth. And then the only way I could do it was to move back in with my parents. Now, again, I was in my late 20s, you know, early 30s. But I did it. I took my father's advice. I started my own business back in 2013. That was my recruiting business. And that was my first dabble into, and I've been an entrepreneur since 2013 by my, you know, rocking and rolling. And then back to my real estate, because I know that's really what we're talking about is real estate. Back in 2008, I was living out in Arizona, but I did live in Boston. I did live in Boston, Massachusetts. I had a condo, right? Couldn't sell it because of the crash. We all know about the crash, and ended up being a landlord. Since 2014, from 2008 to 2014, I owned a condo in Boston, Massachusetts, and was a landlord, and was, you know, making money at the time, just being a landlord. I ended up selling that property back in 2014. I got back into owning property back in about 2020, started buying some single family homes, and, you know, I wanted to create generational wealth. I wanted to create a legacy. I wanted to create retirement for me. And I thought that was going to be a way to do it. I also realized I had no money to do it. I mean, I did, but I didn't, right? You know, we wanted to buy property with other people's money, OPM or PML, whatever you want to call it. So I followed a couple mentors, one being Pace Morby and so on and so forth, and learned how to capital raise, and got PML and started buying single family homes, you know, and being a recruiter helped me capital raise because I knew how to network. I knew how to talk to people. I knew where to go. I wasn't afraid to be in front of people, and it just helped me helped me capital raise, and then creating the Facebook group. And everyone seeing me on there, you know, following me, created that confidence that, okay, we see Cindy. She's not hiding. I feel more comfortable giving Cindy my money because she's not hiding. And I'm bringing some value. And I partnered up with a gentleman out here in Arizona who taught me a little bit about self-directed accounts. And so I brought that value to my Facebook group, and lo and behold, the capital raising kind of took off. I mean, I'm not an expert by any means, but I'm enough to be dangerous, enough to get me dangerous and talk a little bit more about it. But yeah, that, I mean, it's all about networking. And people ask me all the time, how do you capital raise, Cindy, for, you know, your investments? And I said, you know, that's such a hard question for me to answer because it comes so natural to me. You know, recruiting comes, is just a natural thing. And capital raising is basically the same concept. So for everyone asks me, I'm like, oh my God, how do I answer that question? You know, it's a real hard question for me to answer.
Yeah, but, I think it's also a skill set that you developed and had the training wheels in a recruiting sense that you were just acting as the middle person to connect a job seeker with a job provider. And there wasn't like a lot of at risk for you right now. Today, where you're raising money, you've got the deal, but you're also asking someone to invest probably multiple tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in these deals. And it is a little bit more at stake, but you've had those training wheels of the years gone by in the recruiting business to understand how to approach, how to answer questions, how to, if you don't know the answer to a question, you're going to go find it out. Like all those things start to create the calluses on your hands. And I think it's goes back to what I was trying to get at before is like, you had the go at corporate America. So did I. It created calluses and pain points that help you drive you to be someone different. And I think that's important in itself, even though it's not like, as you're saying before, it's not a criticism. It's just you have to be sometimes in those pain points to then force you to go out and do something else and think about it in a different way. Otherwise, nothing's going to change, right? And I think that's what the common theme of this show will be about is creating that drive. But now, you know, I hear a lot of things. Recruiting's still going. You've got self-directed IRAs. I know we said in the bio, you've got the university going, and you're also doing mobile home park investing, I believe.
Yeah.
A lot of lines in the water. How has that been as you're managing the ecosystem of all the little different businesses that are going on for one to help the other and build that empire?
Yeah. So my main, I'm a big believer in fail forward, right? So I bought all these single family homes, right? I will never buy another single family home again. I am do not like to be an operator whatsoever. So I learned my lesson not to own these single family homes again. But the great thing about investing in the mobile home park space is that, and I'm working for Sonos, is that I am now an LP, a limited partner, right? I get the best of both worlds, right? I get the returns and I get to own the asset, right? So me educating folks on self-directed IRAs and solo Ks, I'm still educating that through my Facebook and bringing all of that, say, hey, why do you want to own a single family home? Do you know you're just gonna listen to me. I know being an operator for the single family home, it could be a nightmare and it could be a headache. Now, if you have the thick skin to do it, by all means do it. But I don't want to be sitting on the beach in Jamaica worrying about the AC going out. I'd rather be an LP and a fund and a mobile home park fund where, you know, I know the returns are gonna, you know, come back to me. So all of those, you know, all that education that I'm pouring out into, whether it be LinkedIn, whether it be the Facebook groups, that all comes full circle. And I raise that capital for Sonos.
Gotcha.
For the mobile home park.
Right. Yep. Right. And I think it's also the self-discovery of getting into real estate. Everyone understands real estate from we need a roof over our heads, right? It's a very tangible investment. But then when you start delving into it, there's many aspects of capital raising, operations, you know, finding the deals and all that sort of stuff. And a lot of people do gravitate or don't gravitate to wanting to be the capital raising side and not have to deal with the calls from, you know, the tenants. And that's why mobile home park investing and, you know, RV investing is really come, you know, it was multifamily was a big craze, but then it's like, well, I still got to deal with all the bloody headaches of having 100 tenants or 200 tenants in one building. But with mobile home park investing and RV investing, it's like you're just dealing with the pads, right? It's not your responsibility. And that in itself, I've seen over the years has been like a real like, oh, okay, there's another, I can still have my cake and eat it too without having the headache of operational risk or as much operational risk as you may have in, say, other asset classes.
Yeah. You want to know what the one thing I love about mobile home? Well, there's a few things. But the biggest thing I love is that at the end of the day, you get to rent dirt. You get to rent dirt at the end of the day. But in the mobile home park space, I mean, obviously, we're trying to solve the affordable housing crisis. It's never going to go away, ever. It's always going to be here. Mobile home parks are recession-proof in a good market and a bad market. I mean, we take 2008, right, when everyone couldn't sell their house and they were losing their house. The mobile home parks, I mean, they were hit hard. People were moving into them left and right. So it's in a good market and a bad market. And even, you know, the quality of mobile homes these days are truly remarkable. They're really nice mobile homes. And if you think about it, you could get into a three-bedroom mobile home for $60,000 with putting 5% down. Now, in Arizona, the cost to get into a single-family home, right, a single-family home is $400,000 with 20% down. There's a huge need in the country. And the sad thing is that there are only 44,000 mobile home parks in the U.S.
Yeah, and they're not building anymore.
That's the sad part. Yeah, they're not building anymore. They're not building anymore. It really is sad. So what we do at Sonos is we work with mom and pops that are ready to retire, and you know they've been their cash flowing assets. Maybe they haven't raised rents in I don't know a couple years. We're going in and buying those parks, whether it's a cash deal or a seller financing deal, and we're going to bring those parks back to life.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love the space. I've never personally invested in it, but I understand this because being doing this show for a decade, I've interviewed a lot of people about it. It's definitely you're correct. Like the affordability has been a real issue. Have you seen with the rise in rents and then the decline that we've seen, have you seen delinquency being a problem in the lower end of that affordable housing spectrum? I know we are affordable housing as well on the multifamily side. We have seen a delinquency uptick. Did you see any of that in the mobile home park space as inflation has gotten tighter? You know, the pocket purse strings are starting to tighten on the wage or the check every week that you're coming in. Any of that sort of stuff going on?
Not really, no. I mean, we're still like our parks that we're acquiring, we're getting them up to full capacity. And what we're doing is we're also, depending on like the age of the home, or sometimes we're just gifting the homes to the owner, right? We're gifting the, hey, here's the home. And what's happening is we're reducing our maintenance costs. We're not in charge of the tenants or the toilets. We're just, they're only responsible for the land, the lot rent. So it helps us out in the long run, you know, gifting the homes or, yeah, we don't really have delinquencies. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just a space. It's just it's a unique asset class that I love. I actually fell into it.
Well, pivot talking a little bit about like, you know, you mentioned the cap, and I've heard from a lot of people, you know, friends in the industry that there is only a certain amount of mobile homes to go around, right? I've got a good friend of mine, Kevin Bupp. He's a big mobile home park guy. But there's also been a lot of influx of big capital into this space, right? And that's reduced, you know, I'm sure, you know, back in the day, you probably were buying mobile homes for bloody 8, 9, 10 caps, right? Because there was a lot of ambiguity. You're buying from mom and pops. There's not good reporting. You know, you don't know what the next mobile home park is renting for. Well, today with technology, that sort of ambiguity has decreased, and thus the risk has decreased. Have you seen it be a bit more of a dogfight to get those acquisitions?
What makes us different than any other mobile home park fund or buyer or what have you is that we are building relationships with these mom and pops. I think what happens is a lot of these mom and pops, they've been in the business for 30 years. They've owned this land for 35 years, right? And just to sell it to a big national buyer, you know, sometimes it's a little scary because what are they going to come in? Tear it all down? What we do is we go in there and build that relationship, letting them know that we are not going to tear it down. We are going to make it better. We're going to let their legacy live on. And then that builds the relationship. Right there, that's when they're like, okay, we're going to go with Sonos. So it's a long relationship building process with these mom and pops.
How long is that when you say long? Like by the time for you, you might make that first phone call to sort of a potential deal. What are you talking about? Years, months?
It could be a year. It could be 6 months. It could be a month. It really depends on the situation. Again, sometimes you call them, they're not ready, but then something happens, right? 6 months later. It's just those follow-ups. It's the constant follow-up. I think it's the same in recruiting. It's the constant follow-up.
Well, I was just going to ask. I was going to be like, what are those? What did you do on the recruiting days in terms of touch points with obviously job providers and job seekers? Is that the same cadence that you're using with mobile home park owners?
It's the same. It's the constant follow-up. You need to be in front of them at all times. And then that's when they're going to bite.
Yep.
It's the same.
What do you do? Are you a texter, caller, you know, emailer? Like what's keeping
you
in front of them?
You got to use all that technology. I think of just my parents, right? Like my dad doesn't know how to text. So if you think about it, a lot of these mom and pops, they want you to pick up the phone and call them or write them a handwritten note because that's the generation. They don't understand the technology. So you just have to go with the old school, you know, pick up the phone, call them, send them a box of chocolates, write them a card. That's what the mom and pops want.
Yep. I love it. Mm-hmm. As we pivot towards the end of the show, what's the big thing that you're seeing and what you want to create for your business at the end of 2024 and into 2025 around, you know, your education side, around the mobile home park investing, even maybe around your recruitment business, because I mentioned that you still have that that line in the water. What's the next couple of years got in store for you?
For the mobile home park space, I really want to obviously get as many people involved in the space, you know, being an LP and letting them know that I've been down that single family road nightmare myself and, you know, educating them that, you know, being an LP is the best of both worlds. I'm also, regarding my self-directed, I mean, even today I talked to someone who is actually a real estate investor, had no clue about what a self-directed IRA was. No clue. So I can't wait to get her back on the phone and tell her more about the self-directed. She had no clue what it was. And then regarding for my recruiting business, I'm going to get it to seven figures and sell it and maybe buy another one. I don't know. But I'm going to turn it around and get it going and sell it all.
Quick question on that. It's how have you seen the parallels? And I know we mentioned about the capital raising between the recruitment and real estate. But what else, what other parallels between, say, mobile home park investing or management versus your recruitment business have you seen between the two spaces?
I can, like today was, I talked to this lady, you know, she was in the recruiting space, right? I had a conversation with her. So I used that. We were talking about one subject and then she mentioned real estate. So that's how we kind of, the parallel kind of, I use my recruiting when I talk to my, you know, executives, hey, you have these 401ks, why don't we, you know, put them to work? So it tends to be a win-win for me because I'm talking to a lot of executives that are looking to hire, but then we kind of veer off. Oh, Cindy, I see you on, you know, LinkedIn talking about mobile home parks. What's that all about? You know, and so we have two separate conversations over the phone or over Zoom, whatever it may be.
I love it. I love that ecosystem that you've created. I think it's so freaking cool and how one can feed the other. So hopefully everyone who's listening to this show will go back and rewind and take up some good golden nuggets from Cindy. But Cindy, as we head towards the end of the show, we do like to dive into the top five investing tips. You ready to get into them?
Okay, I'll do my best.
Question number one is, what's the daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
What is the daily habit? Structure. If I don't have structure, I will just fall off.
Anything in particular?
I wake up at 5:30. I start with my morning cup of coffee and I literally dive right in and I try to get a bunch of emails out of the way and, you know, stuff, all the busy stuff that I need to do before I start doing my Zooms or my interviews or what have you out of the way. Yeah, that's kind of, you know, what I really try to focus on is getting it really done in the morning and
Love
moving
it.
On.
Question number two is, who's the most influential person in your career?
I'm going to say my father. You know, like, I wouldn't be where I am today if he didn't own his own businesses, if he didn't push me to start my own. I would not be sitting here talking to you today. I probably would never invested. I would never have started my recruiting company if it wasn't for him.
I love it. Thanks, Dad. So, but no, out of all the shows we've done nearly 500 shows over the last 10 years. Like, there's not been many people with that type of background. Not a lot of older generations come from an entrepreneurial background. So you're mm-hmm. really quite lucky. So well done. You know, that's usually the people we interview are first time generation entrepreneurs or something like that. So
yeah. I'm hoping my boys, because I keep telling them, don't go work for somebody, be an entrepreneur, make yourself money.
Yep.
So hopefully they see me and follow my footsteps, I hope.
Love it. Question number three is, what's the most influential tool in your business? When I say tool, it could be a journal, it could be a phone, or it could be a piece of software that you just can't run the business without. What is it?
The camera that I'm looking into you at. I have to, you know, when I'm recruiting, right, or raising capital, I want people to see that I'm a real person. Whether and social media, right? They need to see that I'm real. Like, I'm taking pictures of myself or talking, what have you. The camera. The camera is something that I cannot live without.
Love it. I love it. Question number four, in one sentence, what's been the biggest failure in your career? What did you learn from that failure?
Going to work for corporate America. You know, I don't know if that's a failure or not, but, you know, I wish, I took stuff away, but, you know, I always look back and be like, why'd I do that? I should have started earlier. You know, I should have started back, you know, earlier working for myself, you know?
Yeah, I hear a lot of people say that. And, you know, I try and tell them, like, it wasn't your time. You needed to go out and create that pain point to be like, now's the time. You know, you needed that little bit. And that's what I tell young entrepreneurs, like, they want to go out and start at 21. The number one thing I tell them, go travel, get out of America for a couple of years. You'll be here when you get back. Go experience the world. And that's going to be an ability. Or go have a bit of time in corporate America to understand what you don't like. And then go create that pain for yourself, because then you'll be more driven to make it work. So, you know, there's a balance there is what I'm trying to say. And trying to, people's journeys can always look back and say, I could have done this or this, but it was your journey. You know, own it. It's okay. It got you to where you are today. So last question, Cindy, where can people reach you to continue the conversation? They want to be in your sphere. Where do they go?
Yeah. So if anybody wants to learn more about Sonos Capital or learning how to be an LP or any self-directed, anything like that, they could reach me at Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, at Sonos, S-O-N-O-S, capital.com.
I want to thank you so much for jumping on the show today. We've had to reschedule a few times, so my apologies. Thank you for coming on and sharing your incredible insight. I just want to reflect some of the things that I took away from today's show. A couple of things is, one, sacrifice. I remember you know, talking about moving in with your parents at late 20s, early 30s. It was a sacrifice, but something you did in order to get ahead. And I think that's a key piece that people maybe have missed in the interview. The second part is relationships and taking your experience from recruiting and how you approach that side of the business and creating a job seeker with a job finder into raising capital would be such a great training wheels, so to speak, to make you better and more successful. And the last thing I really love about what you've built is the recruitment to the education to the capital raising. It is all one thing to the self-directed IRAs. It all is just a beautiful little package in a little bow that probably you didn't think would happen. But now looking back, it's all come together really quite nicely. So did I leave anything out in that little summary?
No, you did. You summed that up really good, my friend. I love it.
That's all. Well, thank you for being and sharing some incredible nuggets with us. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up very, very soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from Cindy. If you are interested in anything that she does, from 401ks to even recruitment, you might be looking for some people in your business, in your real estate business, or you want to look at mobile home park investing, check out Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, at sonoscapital.com. I want to thank you all again for taking some time out of your day to tune in here to continue to grow your financial IQ. It's what we do here each and every week. And the easiest way to give back to this show, share it with your friends. Give it a 5-star review. That's how we keep this show going. We're going to do it all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.